Stand up, Nuggets Nation. Denver Sports presents the Mile High Hoops Podcast with Zach Bye. Powered by Mountain High Appliance. Denver Sports is your home for the most Nuggets content. Now here's your host, Zach Bye.
What is up and welcome to another edition of the Mile High Hoops Podcast. As always, I am your host, Zach Bye, and as always, I appreciate you spending a sliver of your busy day with me here on the pod. It is a very busy day for me as a human being, and we are not going to go too long today. It is a very busy day in Denver sports. We have reacted to Game 2 on Tuesday's episode, which I had a couple people reach out and say, man, that was a freaking awesome, awesome episode. I had one buddy, Pete Schultz, if you're listening, shout out, my guy. He said, man, that was my favorite episode you ever did. It was the night after, raw emotion of Game 2 being there and being in the building for that memorable experience. And it was just a fun day to come in and do a podcast. And nothing's happened materially since then. All right. So I just want to probably spend about 15 minutes just laying out some thoughts that are on my mind as we head into Game 3, which is going to be a real test in Tinseltown, a test in Tinseltown on Thursday night, the same night of the NFL draft where the Broncos could be drafting a quarterback. So we're going to be live on location for the show. I'm going to be on ESPN radio as soon as we're done with this podcast to dish on the Denver Nuggets. Really excited about that. I'm doing play-by-play for Denver against Marquette Lacrosse on Friday night. Going to be covering the Avs at the game on Sunday at Ball Arena. I mean, I am just like, this is just the busy season for me. But it's not a sob story by any means. I love it. I mean, if you told me in 2016 when I'm working four different jobs in Albany, New York to try to get to this place, I would have believed it. And I have to remind myself of that from time to time amidst the just insane schedule. Okay, Nuggets are up 2-0. Life is good, right? Life is good. But you're talking about a game two that could have broken differently. And I think of the Avalanche, who I just mentioned, they lose game one, and then they win game two. And I am just feeling so great about stealing home ice and just got a pep in my step, optimism, and it flipped the series. That was 60 seconds away from being the Lakers' mindset. So, and because these games matter so much, and 2-0 and the history of that, and it's about 87 to 89% of the time, you take that a 2-0 series lead, that 87% of the time you're going to go on to win the series, and that's amazing. But let's not forget, and we will never forget Game 2 and the largest comeback in a Nuggets postseason game ever, but that's what it did take. All right, that's what it did take. And so I just want to be mindful. I don't want to cross over from confident to arrogant, all right? Despite having 10 consecutive wins against the Lakers, despite winning 6 consecutive playoff games against the Lakers, the most in the history of the Lakers, tying it with the Utah Jazz. And should Denver win on Thursday night at 8 o'clock on TNT in LA, they will have the most dominant stretch against the Lakers in the history of that super proud franchise. They're the Yankees of NBA basketball, right? 17 championships. So that would be really something if they can, just from a total on the margins, I mean, that would be cool to say. That would be cool to say. You'll see me tweet that if that's the case, unless someone beats me to it. Couple thoughts, okay? We've talked about this for several years in a row on this podcast. Role players going on the road. The history of this league frowns on role players going on the road. They just have a tendency to play better at home. So Christian Brown going for 10 points in game two, Peyton Watson going for 8 points in game one. You know, could we see that? Absolutely. But it just would not surprise me if the starters had to do more of the heavy lifting in Los Angeles on Thursday night. And it wouldn't shock me if you see guys like Torian Prince Now he already played well offensively in game two, making two threes, but no one else did anything. But would it shock me if Spencer Dinwiddie knocks down some shots or Gabe Vincent makes two or three threes? It just wouldn't shock me. Again, these games take on a life of their own, but I'm talking in broad strokes, the history of the league says that role players are just going to play better at home. That's not rocket science, okay, with the home crowd behind them in spot minutes. Other stuff, Jamal Murray went into the fourth quarter 12 of 40 in the previous seven quarters leading into quarter four of game number two. Not like I'll be like the sky is falling or anything, but it would be unusual to see Jamal Murray struggle for a third consecutive game. Is it possible? Sure, of course. I just watched it for two games in a row or seven of the last eight quarters. But eventually Jamal will break out of this, and I'm expecting it in game three. If we don't see it, I guess I'll just phrase it like my antennas will really be up. And I guess you could take that expectation or conversation surrounding Jamal and just sort of apply it to the Nuggets in general. As we've talked about, the Nuggets have not played, by their standards, they have not played A-plus basketball. They haven't played A-minus basketball, which you could look at it two different ways, right? And if you want to look at it through, hey, we're up 2-0 and we've played B-minus Nuggets basketball, maybe a B, however you would frame it as a fan, that's certainly, I think, the first way that I look at it. And talked about that in Tuesday's episode. But, eventually you do want to see the Nuggets play well as a group. You do want to see the Nuggets make shots. You're talking about in game two, one of 16 in open threes, as Michael Malone pointed out at a shoot-around or practice on Wednesday. So, eventually, you want to see the ball go through. You want to see guys make shots. You want to see Denver Nuggets, that brand of basketball. And maybe we'll see it for the first time in game number three. And that's the hope. That's the hope. Question. Has Michael Porter Jr. been the second best Nugget through two games in the series? I think he's got a case, you guys. I think he's got a case. Now, I don't know if it's the right answer, but he's got a case, and I'll let every fan come up with what that answer is. But he has made 9 threes in 2 games, 19 points in game 1 on 3 of 7 from 3, 8 of 15 from the field, so more than 50% from the field, and then 8 of 13 from the field in game 2, that's about 62%, and 6 of 10 from 3. I just really like what I've seen from MPJ, and don't forget the 8 rebounds in game 1 and the 9 rebounds in game 2. And the most slept on rebound of the entire game is the defensive rebound that ended the Lakers' possession after the LeBron James missed 3 with just seconds left. Michael Porter Jr. is crashing the glass hard, ripping down that 9th rebound right off the window, and then it ends up in the hands of Jamal, and he makes the game winner. Defensive rebounding is the most underrated stat and component in the game of basketball, and I've often referred to it through the years as the trenches that we often refer to in football, the non-sexy stuff. We talk about the quarterback and pass catchers and touchdowns being scored and running. But unless you get it done up front, none of the other stuff is possible. That's how I look at defensive rebounding in the game of basketball. And that was a big one there from Michael Porter Jr., all right? Because if the Lakers secure that rebound, they're taking the last shot to win, or we're going into overtime, all right? So the 8.5 rebounds to go with the 20.5 points per game. So you're averaging over 20 for the series, and you're averaging between 8 and 9 rebounds on 57% shooting. With considering all the stuff that's going on in that young man's life, oh my goodness. I mean, Michael Porter Jr., a toast to you. Not a toast. Toast comes after the series. A tip of the cap. And I think the other guy that would be in that conversation is Aaron Gordon, because the court is cut in half, and Aaron Gordon's defense, particularly in that second half, and even more micro in that fourth quarter against Anthony Davis was absolutely stellar. All right, coming into the series, I said, don't expect like huge, you know, offensive games from Aaron Gordon. Just typically against the Lakers, you look at his history against LA, the Western Conference Finals a year ago. He's doing offensively exactly what I thought he would do, somewhere between 12 and 14 points. I believe, and I hope I'm not misspeaking, you go back to the Western Conference last year in the sweep against the Lakers, every game, 1 through 4, was between 12 and 14 points. But I think that Gordon's defense, I think, man, in choosing who has been the second best player, Jamal's had the best moment, right? We know that for sure. You don't win game two without him. But the consistency of MPJ and Gordon across two games, the big game one for Gordon, 12 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. And then in game number two, the defense against Anthony Davis to go with the 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. He has had just one turnover in each game. So really good stuff there from the secondary stars in their roles outside of Nikola Jokic. And then finally, before we get out of here, guys, there is some angst. I know for some people, maybe it's a little bit of fear, trepidation about what the dynamic will be with the officiating on Thursday evening. We know you've seen the numbers, you've seen the, you know, graphs and whatever that's been out on social media that the Lakers over the last three seasons not only have taken the most free throws, I mean, they have three times as many free throws taken as team number two. You can take team number two and team number three and team number four, put them together, doesn't equal the free throw differential over the last three seasons that the Los Angeles Lakers have accumulated. I totally understand why there would be that sentiment. Because it's just the facts. We're not even sharing an opinion here outlining that dynamic of the free throws and playing 5-on-8, right? But we're talking about a team that's beaten the Lakers 10 times in a row in 6 consecutive postseasons. They weren't calling their own fouls in those games. That wasn't pickup. Okay, there was referees there. Did they get a bad whistle in some games? Sure. Did they take 6 free throws in game number one and have the least amount of made free throws in a playoff game? Yeah, that happened. Do I think that in any of these games over 10, it's been so like heavy-handed, Tim Donaghy, egregious? Not really, but I'm not ignoring the dynamic either. But do I think they're going to be playing 5-on-8 on Thursday night in game 3? No, I don't. I don't. Despite the complaining from LeBron and Darvin Ham about it. And by the way, like, you talk about mental toughness. Could you imagine Jokic losing a basketball game and going and throwing his coach underneath the bus or start blaming the officials? Because that's what happened after game number two. Anthony Davis goes and takes the podium and says that, you know, we don't know where we're supposed to be. And then Darvin Ham is responding to that and saying, we'll agree to disagree. Weird. Weird dynamic. Anthony Davis, what'd you think about that last shot? Or walk us through the last shot. You know, Jamal hit a shot, slams the mic down, walks out. LeBron James goes and complains about the officials and the replay center, and that's the viral cursing response. I don't know, man. I keep going back and forth on what the expectation in game 3 is. And I just like, man, do these guys just know in their heart of hearts they can't beat that other group over there? Do they just know that they can't beat that other group? And how would that manifest itself in game 3? I don't know. But if I had to decide, I will say the Denver Nuggets find a way to win 11 times in a row, 7 consecutive postseason games against the Los Angeles Lakers. That's my prediction for game number 3. I hope you guys enjoy the game. Thank you for being here. And whatever happens in game 3 and game 4, we'll be back on Tuesday talking about it right here on the Mile High Hoops podcast.